This is On the Other Hand. A podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, April Chatham Carpenter, and I'm here today with my co-host, Glenn White. On our podcast, Glenn and I interview community leaders in Arkansas who help work towards solutions across various political or other divides and who in other ways reach across various divisions within our community. In the first part of our conversation with Robert Richards, you learned several fascinating things about his work with the Clinton School of Public Service, as well as the students' experience and training, and his emphasis on perspective taking in so much of what he does. Now we're going to get to the second part of the conversation that we had with Robert. And in this episode, we're going to learn more about how he sees there being a difference between dialogue and deliberation, what kinds of strategies he brings into the classroom, as well as thinking about how polarization is tied to the lack of focusing on relationships.
Kind of another thing in terms of talking about political views, I know that initially you had mostly people from the U.S., and I know you have significant amounts of those still. If you ask the average person on the street, I would imagine many people would say, oh, Clinton School of Public Service. Well, you'll probably have a lot of liberals, blues, Democrats attending there. I wonder, is that accurate? Does the Clinton School of Public Service tend to draw primarily students who lean heavily blue? Or what does it look like in that respect?
Well, I think a majority of our students have left or center politics, but certainly not all. And we have a substantial number of students who have conservative or right of center views. These are students both from the U.S. and students from outside the U.S. And so there is a good deal of ideological variety and diversity in the classroom. And oftentimes that's one of the things that I enjoy about the Clinton School is creating an environment where students feel comfortable expressing a diverse a range of views, and also helping students encounter views that they may not have experienced before and learn how to deal with those views constructively. I try to create a classroom environment in which students feel comfortable expressing themselves and exploring the implications of their views, regardless of where they stand on the political spectrum.
Okay, so you may have answered this question I had in mind a little bit. You may have some other things to contribute. How you encourage your students to get beyond their own biases, their own experiences, so that they can better understand the stories of others who have differing views?
Well, you and April help us do this because many of our students sign up to go through Braver Angels moderator training. That's exactly what you all help our students do, Braver Angels moderator training itself, and then the requirement of students who go through Braver Angels moderator training to participate in or observe a Braver Angels skills workshop. Gives those students an opportunity to learn a particular method and have the experience of getting involved in that method by which they can see the views and the values and the concerns of members of a political viewpoint that's different from their own. And then they allow, I've been through a number of those workshops as well. So I know that it's a very transformative experience. You really start to see the world from the perspective of people who differ from you politically, and that's a very constructive experience. And then students have those encounters, and then they bring those insights back into the classroom, where they continue to encounter students who differ from them politically, and that fosters a sense of constructive discussion in the classroom. In addition, we teach students methods of facilitation, of neutral facilitation, objective facilitation. And we also train students in the use of ground rules and dialogue and deliberation procedures that they can use to help create an environment in a discussion to foster a sense of safety and comfort among people who are of different views on an issue. I think through providing students with experiences, but also training them in constructive discussion skills, all of that contributes to enabling students to go beyond their comfort zones to encounter and empathize with and understand views that are different from their own, and to help their fellow class members and also members of the community to have those experiences as well.
Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about, Robert, as you've been talking about, is, you know, we might have people that are listening here that are teachers. And so I'm thinking about, you know, how we do this as teachers in the classroom. I know that Braver Angels does some collaboration with a group that works on college debates and discourse, but even in the high school, we have some people that are working on bringing some of these skills into the high school classrooms as well. And I'm curious about the expression of ideological diversity in your classroom, actually, as you might be having discussions. You mentioned the example of coup. I wrote it down when you were talking about it, and I'm like, coup? When did we have a coup in the U.S.? And then I'm like, oh, we're talking about the January 6th, but not everybody would call it a coup. And so there's an example of ideological diversity, and of course you've got the global folks who are bringing in, well, here's our experience, and, you know, be able to compare and contrast kind of what the experiences were. But I'm curious, are there any, like Central Partners, I know, uses reflective structured dialogues in classrooms or suggests that teachers use those. So if you could talk a little bit about how you actually do that when you might get into kind of talking about difficult topics actually in your classroom, not just talking about how to facilitate it outside of the classroom, but in the classroom itself.
Well, we, thank you for that question. We try to practice what we preach in our communication course, and one of the ways we do that is we have a set of ground rules for our classroom discussion. So we start every classroom discussion with a set of ground rules to help provide structure to the students' interaction. And those ground rules encourage students to, for example, we have a ground rule that says, please pause to consider the needs and concerns and the interests of the other members of the class before we speak or write or post something publicly, to encourage students to take into consideration the viewpoints, but also the feelings of the other people in the discussion. To remember that that every communication interaction that they have in our class doesn't involve just words; it also involves a relationship. And that they want to maintain that relationship and have it be constructive. And oftentimes, our learning experience will be better, it'll be more effective, if we maintain positive, constructive relationships with the other members of our class. And that helps a great deal. I think one of the major features of our, and I think this is something that I learned from David Skaggs long ago, when he was trying to promote civility among members of Congress, I think one of the insights that he had, and one of the insights that I've had from the literature on interpersonal communication and on polarization, is that very severe polarization in a society really occurs when people neglect the relational dimension of communication, when they think that their views and their principles, and their opinions and the ability to express their opinions, when that's more important than maintaining a constructive relationship with their neighbors. And one of the things that we've learned from the study of communication, which is why I really enjoy being part of the profession, is that humans are entirely capable of maintaining constructive relationships with one another while expressing differences of view. But it takes skill to do that. It takes learning particular practices to do that. And because humans are very sensitive to norms and they're very sensitive to the context in which they find themselves, we find that it's extremely helpful to use techniques like setting ground rules and using procedures and using particular facilitation skills to foster those constructive relationships. That humans do better when they've got some norms to work with, when they have some procedures to work within, particularly when they're dealing with people that they don't know very well. That if they have a little bit more structure, they're more likely to be able to have constructive interactions and to be mindful of the relational dimension of communication while they're interacting with their neighbors with whom they disagree. So,
do you have an example you'd be willing to share about a time in a classroom where you think that it went well and that you were able to, people really did follow these kinds of ground rules and focused on their relationships more than on just making a point?
I think it happens actually very frequently. So, for example, we regularly do a structured dialogue or structured deliberation in our classroom on the topic of food security, using the Land of Plenty issue guide written by the National Issues Forums Institute. And there we often find that students disagree very strongly about certain policies concerning food. In particular, they often disagree strongly about the cultural dimension of food and what to do about food practices, particularly in our southern society, that are very important to people, are very deep and rich and integral aspect of our traditions, but that may not be healthy for people. And our students often strongly disagree along, and the divides are often along ideological lines, about what to do about those less than healthy food practices that are nonetheless really important culturally to members of our society. Students often disagree about the role of the state and the role of the free market in addressing those concerns. Those deliberations occur within a structure that the students are familiar with by the time we have this discussion, a set of ground rules that they're familiar with. The students take turns facilitating those discussions. And so during these deliberations, they play both the role of the object of facilitator and the participant who's very engaged. And the ground rules encourage people to engage in perspective taking, to show respect for one another. And the briefing materials that they work with are balanced, and they're considering trade-offs as well as advantages of different policy options. So I think those discussions in particular are a great example of how students feel free to express very distinct differences of viewpoint and of values while showing respect for one another and learning from one another as they exchange diverse views on that issue.
So that works in the classroom when we set up structure and we have ground rules and we have built kind of relationships and expectations and provide materials. I'm curious if your students ever come back and talk about, I tried this technique with my friend or my family member and when the conversation was taking a negative turn. Any thoughts on responding in those kinds of settings, maybe when we don't have that kind of structure available to us?
Yeah, this often happens where my students do a perspective taking exercise where I ask them, as they learn different ways to categorize basic values, they do a perspective-taking exercise in which they imagine a person whom they're close to in their life with whom they have a substantial disagreement, and they try to engage in perspective-taking vis-a-vis that other person. And what they often find is that there are some issues where they simply are unable to empathize with the other side. They're simply unable to engage in perspective taking in a constructive way. So that's a very helpful and enlightening moment in the course where students really learn the limits of this of these techniques, that there are some issues that are and I know this is true for myself. There are some issues where I'm incapable of empathizing with the other side because I find the alternative view really abhorrent, and that often happens in issues of with respect to issues of identity, where the person on the other side of the issue, their viewpoint would negate my existence. Or and my students often encounter this along lines of religion or race or ethnicity, where the person on the other side of the divide holds a viewpoint that would negate the existence of my student, and so there are limits to these techniques of perspective taking and empathizing. And I encourage students to actually reflect on this in the final exam in my course. I offer students the option to write on a number of different topics that have been themes in the course, and one of them is the limitations of dialogue and deliberation, and where they have a chance to see that even those these techniques can be very effective and powerful, there are some situations in which they don't apply, and we're well advised as people involved in citizen participation to be conscious of the limitations of the techniques that we're bringing to public engagement.
So if you could just briefly tell me something about this new effort that I had heard about, but I learned more about it yesterday when I went to the Clinton Presidential Library and heard a presentation on this effort to improve the civic health in Arkansas, which I found out we have this dismal rating of 51st out of 51. Can you tell us a little bit about that initiative briefly, which I understand you had a major role in playing?
Well, thank you, Glenn, and thank you very much for coming to our launch event yesterday. So I guess I get to tell a little story about this project, which I really enjoy doing. And it's a great example also of the role that students play in our research and learning activity and our public service activity and the leadership of our dean, Dean Victoria De Francesco Soto. So in January 2022, one of our students at the time, Kwame Abdul-Bey, came to Dr. Chul-Hyun Park, my colleague, and me, and said, hey, there's this method of evaluating the quality of civic engagement. It was developed by this group in Washington, D.C., and it's been used in many states in the U.S., including some of our neighbor states, but we haven't done it. And he said, why haven't we done it? So we said, well, that's a good question. And so we looked at the research and we saw that it was we were familiar with this framework from our research. Kwame, our student, contacted this organization. It's called the National Conference on Citizenship. It's a nonprofit organization that's chartered by Congress. It was chartered it was proposed by President Kennedy and then implemented by President Johnson in the 1960s to promote civic engagement in the U.S. And as part of that work, they developed a research framework for evaluating the quality of civic engagement so that states and large metropolitan areas could evaluate how people are engaging in public life in their area as a way to gain a benchmark understanding and then to take action to improve civic engagement in their area. And so Kwame contacted the organization and we set up a call and we had another call and then all of a sudden we were involved in the project and then we developed a coalition of a number of organizations with the Rockefeller Institute, Engage Arkansas, which is our AmeriCorps state coordinating organization, plus the Central Arkansas Library System, the Arkansas Peace and Justice Memorial Foundation, and then a number of funders. In addition, Engage Arkansas provided a substantial grant to us, but also the Arkansas Community Foundation, the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, and Americans for Prosperity Foundation all contributed funds to this grant project, in which we obtained data from the Census Department, the Census Bureau, on measures of civic engagement. And then we conducted qualitative research. We interviewed citizens from all over the state. And then we obtained additional data on campus voting. We worked with Dr. Joyce Ajayi at University of Central Arkansas, who became a co-author on the research. She has conducted this unique assessment of the availability of public information on government websites, county and city websites. President Clinton wanted us to evaluate the availability of newspapers and radio stations in the state, so we included that. So we did this very broad assessment of the quality of civic engagement in the state, both in terms of voting, voter registration, voter turnout, but also other forms of political engagement, for example, political conversations with family members and neighbors, the degree to which people attend public meetings in the state, but also the degree to which people are involved in their communities, the degree to which they are members of community organizations, the degree to which they volunteer, the degree to which they donate to political causes or to religious or nonprofit causes. And all of this gives us a kind of comprehensive view of the degree to which Arkansans are involved in public life. And the benefit of this method, this civic health framework, is that it's used throughout the U.S. And the Census Bureau, every couple of years, collects data, quantitative data, all over the country on these same questions, so we can compare the results across the states. And we can see how Arkansas fares on each of these measures compared to other states and compared to the national average. So and the broad result, the clearest finding from the result is that Arkansas ranks quite high in terms of neighborliness, in terms of talking with family and friends, in terms of membership in organizations, and in terms of charitable giving. We're all above the national average on all of those points. But we're below the national average on voting and voter turnout. In fact, we have the lowest rate of voting and the lowest rate of voter turnout in national elections of any state in the country. So that's a clear area where we want to improve in the coming years. And it's interesting, one of the patterns we can see in the results of the research is that and I think it's consistent with our experience of living in this state. We have very strong ties with people who are close to us, but we have a much weaker relationship to public life. So that's an area where a number of our partners are going to take action. The Winthrop Rockefeller Institute has started a new program called Civic Arkansas, which will launch in next year, which will involve a series of listening sessions and public discussions to review the results of the Civic Health Index report for Arkansas, and then to ask people in local communities about those results, how they square with their own personal experiences, and their ideas for taking action to improve people's participation in public life. For example, in interviews that we conducted with people in a number of areas of the state, we found the two major reasons why people don't vote are that in many communities, there are too few voting places. And so people have extremely long wait times and have to stand in extremely long lines in order to cast their vote. And in rural areas, people who have lower incomes or elderly people who don't own their own cars, many of them are in rural areas where there's no public transportation, so they literally can't get to the polls. It's very difficult for them to get transportation to the polls. So those are two areas where we can see solutions that could be implemented pretty readily to take action. But we need more insights. One of the gaps in the report is that we were not able to find clear information about why people aren't registering to vote in the first place. So that's an area where we would like more input from the public as we continue to do research and as we conduct listening sessions with our partners at the Rockefeller Institute in the coming year.
Good luck in that, and I hope maybe in some way Braver Angels locally can find some way to participate in that and help out where it's appropriate. Well, listen, given all the problems we've got in our country right now, all the tribal politics, disinformation, hostility and stuff, I know that you've already told us a number of things about what you and the Clinton School are doing to increase healthy political behavior in your students and with some of the initiatives you've worked on. Any other thoughts about what gives you hope these days that we can actually make a difference and turn things around in terms of communicating effectively and showing empathy toward people with different views?
Well, thanks, Lee. Well, actually, I am quite hopeful. There are a couple of things that make me hopeful. One is young people. I'm fortunate, as all of us are, to work on a regular basis with young people, and we see that they are highly dissatisfied with the state of our politics today. They know it's perfectly feasible to have constructive discussions with people that they disagree with, and they're very often astonished that that older folks like us are not doing it, are not putting it into practice. So the optimism and the hopefulness and the common sense of young people, I think, are really going to benefit us in the future. In addition, we can take lessons from the past. So one lesson I reflect on a lot is that, you know, older folks like us, I'm not a real Arkansan. I've only lived here for 5 or 6 years. But real Arkansans like yourselves and our neighbors, they remember a time, I mean, less than 20 years ago, when things were not like this. And people from different sides of the aisle, they actually had constructive discussions, and they cooperated on policy matters on a regular basis. Bipartisan activity in the state was a regular pattern of behavior in Arkansas. Our governors used to alternate between parties. It was very common to have governors from, well, at least after the Jim Crow period, it was quite common to have governors from different parties leading our state. We and our neighbors can remember when it was different, we can get back there. It was not so long ago. And many of us remember, I'm speaking not for myself, but for my neighbors and my students and my colleagues who say these things, they remember how they talked with one another back then. So I'm highly optimistic that if the structural factors in our lives that are promoting polarization and discord can be addressed and modified, we can get back there. We can get back to normal politics, normal cooperation along bipartisan lines to do constructive work together for the community. And we have a number of entities in our state that are working to promote this. Braver Angels, your organization, is an important one. I know I've worked with Americans for Prosperity Foundation on a number of initiatives. They supported the Civic Health Index, but I've also worked with them on a program to foster cross-partisan discussions on the issue of race and education, and we've developed a number of solutions that have arisen from that that process. So I'm quite optimistic for both of those reasons. I guess there's one other reason, too, that I should raise, too. So President Clinton often says, he talks about the first time he lost an election. He had been elected to a term of governor. He was very confident. And then he lost his next election. He was not reelected as governor after his first election. And he was really stunned by that loss. So what did he do? He went around the state listening to voters. He would go to communities that he had won in his first election and lost in his second election. And he would go to these small communities all around the state and ask them, well, why did you not vote for me the second time? What did I do wrong? And he listened. It was a very humbling experience for him. And he listened. And he engaged in perspective taking. He saw the situation from the perspective of the other people. And then he changed his approach. He kept his policies the same, but he decided to substantially change the way he was communicating and the way he was presenting himself to the voters of Arkansas. And lo and behold, he ran again and was reelected and then reelected. And then we know the rest. And that's a great example of how a prominent figure in Arkansas did not dismiss people who had taken a different view, but reached out to them and engaged them and sought to see things from their perspective, and then adapted and changed and went on to implement a number of very successful policies that had a profound impact on the well-being of people in the community, particularly in the areas of education and health. And we all benefit from those. We all benefit from those policies today. So we know that it's possible to do things differently. And we know how to get there. And I think that by working together and pooling our resources and wisdom, we can really make a difference and turn things around in our country in the coming years.
So I think as we kind of bring this to a close, Robert, this has been wonderful. I wonder if there are any recommendations that you would like to leave our listeners with in terms of maybe how they could make a difference in their own communities, or, you know, in helping bridge the political divide. I often talk about Braver Angels as having a mission, although this is not their official mission, but how I describe it is, you know, being able to help people talk across the political divide and build relationships, one relationship at a time. And I know that that's one thing that we can do is, you know, to work on perspective taking in our own relationships. But do you have other recommendations that you would have for others, how to improve maybe their own personal civic health index? You were measuring the state's index, but what recommendations would you give?
Well, thanks for that question, April. So one thing I would encourage folks to do, and I've done it myself, is to take the little courses that are the brief skills workshops that are offered by Braver Angels, but also by Essential Partners and some other organizations that help us to have better conversations with people in our lives. These are particularly valuable before the holidays, where we're encountering family members. I've used these skills in interactions that I've had with my own relations and with my neighbors in holiday settings, and found it very, very helpful. I guess I'd also encourage folks to listen to Monica Guzman's podcast. I've forgotten the name of it, but it's one of the main Braver Angels podcasts now, which I think is really beneficial, emphasizes engaging with people with whom we disagree in a spirit of curiosity and generosity of spirit. I also encourage listening to another Braver Angels a podcast by John Wood, who regularly holds discussions among people who disagree on various issues and helps them to have civil conversations with one another. I've shown a number of those conversations in my class as examples of how to have civil discussions among people who disagree. So encouraging us to look at models of how to do things differently, how to have more constructive discussions, and I guess taking the approach that this is about skills, about learning particular techniques and skills that we can use to implement little by little in our lives to make a difference, to help foster more productive and positive discussions in our own lives. And I'm confident that that's going to have a larger impact down the road.
One of the things that we've started doing, we kind of like, if possible, given that we tend to talk a lot about some of the heavier, more dark parts of our political culture and environment, is to finish up with something a little bit on the light side. Do you have any kind of story or thought that you could share with us? Maybe it's something interesting that's happened to you, a funny story, or something just, you know, that might help us end on kind of a cheery note.
I guess I would. One of the most heartwarming experiences that we've had here in recent years was we had a member of our community who was extremely nervous about facilitating a discussion, a public discussion. And so I worked with experienced students, so second-year students who were very experienced facilitators and very confident. And we all worked together to work with this student and help her increase her confidence answer questions as she went through training. We held a practice dialogue where a number of students played participants to provide a very realistic experience to help the student feel comfortable and prepared. And then they went into their real-world public discussion to practice their facilitation skills. And it turns out there were some prominent public figures who decided to show up and were participating in the discussion. And the student did perfectly well. They had an experienced student there beside them to guide them and coach them and advise them. And a combination of the preparation, but also the reassurance that the more experienced students provided to this first-time student really enabled them to lead that discussion in a very effective way. And it was a very satisfying and heartwarming experience where we showed that that when we work together and provide adequate supports to students, they can really achieve to the maximum of their potential. But it takes a plan, and it takes gathering resources, and it takes time and preparation to enable that to happen. But it is feasible, and that was a nice glint of hope for me going into the holidays.
Right, knowing that something actually works when you have a plan, when you provide the support, give them a little practice. We can do lots of things we might be worried about, and I think that's something that's important for people hearing this who might consider doing a Braver Angels event or workshop or coming to one of our civil conversations, you know, or just talking to your family or friends. You know, go in with a plan, learn some things, practice it ahead of time, and then do it. It can help. So thank you so much. Robert, anything else we haven't talked about that you wanted to share with us at this point?
Well, I just wanted to thank you both so much. You have been extremely supportive of our students for the last several years, introducing them to Braver Angels moderator training, often guiding them through that training, advising them, sometimes being their examiner. And your role has really been indispensable, and I'm so grateful to you for all the guidance that you provided to our students, enabling now we have a couple of dozen of trained Clinton School students who are certified Braver Angels moderators, who here in the U.S. but also in many other countries bring the lessons of Braver Angels and the value of perspective taking and constructive discussion across differences to their societies to make substantial improvements there. So thank you all so much for all you're doing.
Well, thank you for the work that you're doing and for the building into the lives of our next generation. So it's been wonderful to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much. We appreciate your time with us. Robert, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. It's been a great experience. And more power to your podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. And have a happy holidays. Happy grading also.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the second part of today's conversation with Dr. Robert Richards from the Clinton School of Public Service. Be sure to check out the first part of the two-part conversation with Robert, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. And you can find those on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website. And that's at arkansas.braverangels.org. Or you can find it on many popular podcast sites. And when you visit our website, in addition to links to all of our episodes, you'll also find a link to email us, and that is at otherhandar@gmail.com. And feel free to send us your program feedback or suggested speakers.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band. Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, April Chatham Carpenter,
and Glenn White.
Let's each do our part to bring our community closer together.